Welcome to Omschooling for Spirituality. The Flow is a delightful mix of insight, divine inspiration, and humor, where wisdom meets earthiness to help your ongoing spiritual growth and transformation. Follow the flow of enlightenment and explore everything spiritual through the deepest self-inquiry as student Lisa Berry asks master spiritual teacher G.P. Walsh the kinds of questions you would ask an elder, a wise man, or a sage, and receive direct, simple, comprehensive, and deeply human lessons and teachings. From transcending the experience of separation, releasing old conditioned patterns and wounds, and alleviating suffering, to demystifying esoteric practices and revealing one's true purpose and innate freedom. Welcome to the flow of enlightenment. Transformation is all there is. Hello and welcome, everyone. GP, as I hear that intro every time, I think, oh my gosh, that sounds like a lot's happening in this show.
Well, it is. It's understated, but it is happening.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
You just have to dole it out in just little bites with a smooth sound, right?
Like, yes.
Like an FM radio announcer.
Like you've tuned in for the evening show. Well, speaking of bite-sized pieces, it was funny because we had made something funny happened when we were talking, and I was like, those are karma's like brownie points, and now I'm thinking of two bite brownies because you said bite-sized. And so today's show, we are talking about, well, we're referring to the word karma, and wow, when you really break it down, I love that you shared, it's really about reward and punishment. So my first student question today, all around this karma business, is, well, okay, this is what I want to say. A lot of us are familiar with saying, karma will bite you in the ass, or karma will get you, or I'm doing this for good karma. Now, is karma real and necessary to keep order in this world?
Well, to keep order? No.
Oh.
No. You don't need it to keep order. But it's just one of those, you know, one of the many things that has immigrated from the East to the West. And in the West, it's gotten mixed up with the Western idea of morality and ethics and that sort of thing. And so, you know, the Western idea of the Abrahamic religions of, you know, God and punishment, basically this is what you do or, you know, you're going to get whacked. Maybe now, but definitely after you die. And you get one shot at it, by the way. You only get one shot. That's it. You mess it up on this lifetime. It's like you get the reward or the punishment forever. Anyway, it seems to be that kind of a thing. Like there's the lords of karma sitting up there somewhere, judging your actions, telling you what's going to, and meeting out punishment and rewards. It's actually not like that. There's a natural flow to life, right? Everything kind of flows its course. And if a river is heading a certain direction, it's going to keep heading in the direction unless there's something in the way, in which case it's going to go around it. Or another example would be like a spaceship in space where there's no resistance, right? There's no gravity around pulling it. It just continues to head in exactly the same direction unless something comes up and interacts with it and bumps it off onto a different course. Well, this is the flow of life. This is the flow of our energy. And so karma is simply the tendencies and trends that once they get started, there's a tendency for them to continue that way until or unless something comes, bumps into it, and goes in some other direction. The thing that comes up for us, especially here in the West, is that we're always wanting the best things to happen, so we're trying to figure out how to do it. So we want to control this flow to go in the direction that we want it to.
Yes, I like that.
Yes, yeah, and it's like trying to make the river change its course. You're just going to get really wet.
Hey, that's true. Now, you just made me think of something. When and funny, they start with a k each. I love that. But when people
it isn't going the way they like, a lot of people will say, I'm cursed, you know, and they think, so is sometimes when we look at that, it's because even if somebody else says, I'm cursing you, you know, is it our awareness of what momentum is currently happening that can, that continues and perpetuates that, that flow?
Yes, absolutely. There's this, we become aware of it. We become aware that there are things going on in our lives and we don't seem to be able to change them.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Yeah, they're stuck like
because
that.
Because the momentum is stronger than our intention or our effort. It really is all about the focus of attention. I mean, if you've got a bad habit about something, right, it's going to take some effort to change that habit.
Yes.
It's going to take repetition, right? Because the momentum that we all get, everyone has it in their life. There are certain tendencies. They just get repeated over and over again, so they become very strong. Right? They get kind of ingrained in us. Mm-hmm. So how do you undo those, or how do you change those? Well, you can't just decide one day, okay, I'm going to manifest a car or something, and the car shows up. Because you've got all of these thoughts, emotions, and sensations, the sum total of our experience, all headed in this direction with a certain amount of force. Right? So if you're going to change that direction, there's no way you're going to turn it on a dime. A human life is like a huge ship. Right? you start the process of turning, right?
Right?
And it could take a half an hour to change or an hour to change the direction of that shift. Well, your ship, your life is a whole lot bigger than any ship, no matter how big it is. And so there's enormous amount of momentum and patterns within the nervous system going on that, and a lot of it we're not even aware of.
Let's go with Western for a second, because we do need to break down between Eastern and Western. In the Western world, do we kind of look at karma like it's an, like brownie points. We'll add them up, and if we get enough good ones, we can turn the ship faster in the direction that we want. But if we do something bad, then at two steps behind, turn backwards two steps the other way, wrong way.
Well, yeah, and that's not merely true in the West. That's also true in the East.
Oh, okay.
They just see it. They see it differently. They don't see it in terms so much as, you know, as judgment or pejoratives or, you know, crime and punishment kind of thing. They see it as being, you're building up energy. Every action you take has a karmic effect. There's no such thing as an idle action. You cannot separate any action you do from every other action you do and every other action you're going to do ever in the future.
Right.
It's a constant series. So everything you do is moving the trend or the direction of your life in one direction or another. You just do it enough times, especially unconsciously and unwittingly, it just kind of takes over. It's like a rock rolling down the hill, right? Mm. Get out of the way. Don't try to stop it.
Right.
So what people of all cultures try to do is to try to change the little behaviors, recognizing that it is just little things, one thing after another and consistently, in order to get a better outcome, in order to get a better life. In some cultures, it means I'm going to be reborn in a higher class or caste, right? I'm going to have the opportunity to be reborn. I mean, I heard one guy say, is it possible for people in the West, you're asking some sage, to get enlightened? He says, no, best they can hope for is live a good life and get a rebirth in India. Okay, thank you. It's not quite that bad. And so in the East, they have this idea of building up merits.
Mm, yes.
Where you're going to earn, basically you're earning brownie points, right? And those merits compound, and then you get a better incarnation in your next life. And eventually, you know, work your way all the way up to Buddhahood. And so in most of the Eastern religions, including Buddhism other than Zen, this buildup of merits is kind of the deal, which is a good thing. I mean, it's actually a gentler way of creating an ethical or moral system that a culture can live under than, you know, the crime and punishment model of the West.
Yeah, it helps us to be more mindful.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely. And even, like, you're a little kid, like, if you're good, you'll get dessert, you know, like, that. it's not a terrible, terrible thing, but it doesn't take away, when we have this firm belief about karma, can we let it actually take over our decision-making for us in a way that we're giving up our power to believe in karma?
Well, Carl Jung made a very interesting statement. He said, I can do as I will, but I cannot will as I will.
I cannot
it's
will as I will.
Deeply profound to ponder, well, where are my decisions coming from? Well,
yes.
The decisions are also being moved by karma. That's mm-hmm. also part of the momentum, your whole thought process, the emotional process, the gender you have in this life, all are a result of karma. That's flow of the energy.
Okay, hold on. I got to break that down. Hold on. Go. And by the way, I would like to just announce to anybody, if you are having some questions about karma right now, anything at all, like you believe in it, you don't, you want to understand more, you need to do things like I do and process and go, wait a minute. Well, then we are inviting you to call in. Yeah, like, wow, wait, help me out here. So give us a call.
Wait a dang minute there.
Give us a call right now, live on air. You've got all the way till 2 p.m. Eastern to call in and ask GP your own question. The number to call in is 202-570-7057. And if you don't catch us this time, but you're like, I really want to ask a question, just email us at questions@gpwalsh.com. Even if the show is over and we can still address it, you know, in the group or something. But when you say that about not just gender, I wasn't stuck on gender, but that's a big decision that I think that you have really no, you know, like, hey, you're born. I'm kind of lost that one. Is it the lifetime I am now, is any of my karma, quote unquote, building up for what I'm going to be next life? Should I come back?
Yes. Everything.
Because it's a flow.
Because it's a constant flow, yeah. And it can go in any direction whatsoever. There is more to it, but we'll get to that in a second. It's kind of fun to just kind of look at it from this point of view.
Yeah.
Just look. Everything you've done, right? Every cause creates an effect, and every effect becomes a cause. I mean, it's an endless
yes.
stream, right? So everything is both a cause and an effect simultaneously.
Yes.
So what this moment is always the present in the next moment. Every decision I make, no matter even if I'm making it consciously or unconsciously, whether it's karmic or enlightened, it's going to affect the next moment. You see, there's no escape from karma.
Right, yeah.
You don't, well, there is, but not in the way people think. And we'll get to that.
Yes.
But it's you. I mean, there's no escape from the Tao. There's no escape from the way things are.
Right.
And so everything being just this constant flow of cause and effect, which is what karma represents, then everything you do will ripple forward, and it's
right.
inevitable. There's, you know, you reap what you sow. The Bible put it, right? And it's true. We do. The anger, the hatred you have, it always comes back at you.
It's funny when you said the anger and hate. Well, you know, people say it comes back, but it's actually not that it comes back. It's that it's caused and causing.
Yes.
So anger has been caused by something somewhere, but it's also continue that momentum. So, okay, now this is probably not the question to jump to, but I do want to ask by the end of the show how to turn that ship around faster. I guess that's what everybody would like to know, because they all want to have that, the nice causes. Like, I want it the way I want it. the desire and the reward.
Yes, that and at that point, you know, karma fits very nicely into the world of metaphysics and manifestation and the law of attraction and all that.
Yes.
Because how do I get what I want, right?
Yes.
It's. I can hear Lucy in the background.
Could you? I actually wasn't sure I was going to say. She apparently thinks that she can.
yeah, that's right. Well, I had a cat that talked to me. She actually said my name.
Oh.
Yeah, and I wasn't the only one here. I wasn't tripping. I was the only one. I'm not the only one who heard it. people be over and they hear this. And they go, did she just say your name? I said, yeah, she sure did. Yeah.
She was definitely ready
for the next for this next step up.
Well, quick question right there, because you mentioned that. Do animals have karma? Or
everything is karma. It's not a personal thing. It's the way the universe works.
Okay, that even is a better understanding. That's helpful, because then people are listening thinking, yeah, it's not just you. It's not just karma belongs to people.
It's not personal.
It's not personal.
No. Air's not personal. Sun's not personal. Hey, that's my son.
I was like, that's mine. Well, ownership really comes into karma, I think, too. We believe there's freedom. If we give freedom, if we allow freedom, I don't know the right word is, but allow freedom, give freedom, then we will have freedom. But that's kind of not how it works. That's what I want. Just when we come back after break, I want to talk about tit for tat. There we go. Because you're like, okay, wait, that's what we're doing when we come back. And a final, not final, but another invitation to anybody when we do come back from commercial, give us a call at 202-570-7057 and ask GP your karmic question.
The Real Conscious Connection. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Touch, move, and inspire. Sharing your story of how you overcame your deepest struggle will serve as someone else's survival guide. You are ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page. I'm Jocelyn Bellows, host of Breakdown to Wake Up, a live stream show dedicated to sharing personal journeys of men and women who have traversed through mazes of uncertainty, dark clouds, and dishonoring themselves, and the lessons they have learned along this path of what one can accomplish in our own self-discovery. And as a writing and life coach, I work with men and women to break through the BS of their lives to find their own voice and leaping into a life they love. It is my belief that when we share our stories of how we overcame what we have been through, it will serve as someone else's survival guide. So if you're ready to get the book out of your head and onto the page, I'd love to hear from you. Go to www.jocelynbellows.com and join me every Tuesday at noon Eastern and Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone. We are talking about karma here on the Flow of Enlightenment, which is the flow. Lots of flows. And okay, I want to jump into that. Yeah, tit for tat here. And it is a balancing. It's that weighing out. But I know that I've never been one to say, well, that's karma or this or that. I don't know why. It just is, you know, isn't my thing. But I'm certainly aware of people and myself believing in that reward or punishment things, even if it's subtle, even if it's very subtle. I think, oh, look at me. I'm a good person. I did good things. I'm going to be destined not to get sick or this or that. But if it's never, does karma ever, did it ever start somewhere?
Well, that's the big question, actually, that leads to the ultimate solution to this, the ultimate understanding of it. And, you know, first off, that whole idea just kind of seems to fall apart. I mean, I got a question in satsang, and I took the excerpt from the satsang, my answer to it. And it was, why do innocent people suffer?
Yes.
Now, it's not enough for us to just say, well, that's their karma, right? Mm. Which can give us an excuse to be totally indifferent. Because that indifference will create our karma, and we'll find ourselves in the same position they are. At some point, right?
Right.
You know, this is why compassion, well, there's two techniques that are used that are the closest to a way of actually getting some freedom from it, not the ultimate freedom. One is compassion. Mm-hmm. The other is a thing called karma yoga.
Oh.
And compassion is simply taking on, being willing to be with the suffering of others and doing what you can to relieve it. And if you can't relieve it, to simply be with it. The open-heartedness of compassion is really the highest state that we can be in. And karma yoga is the practice of action with no attachment to results. So what you do is simply whatever's needed in the moment, right? Whether it's doing dishes or taking care of your kids or going to the grocery store, you simply do it without any expectation of what result it might bring to you. This severs us from this idea of trying to create my own future, trying to make something happen, trying to make things the way I want them to be, which is based really on the ignorant notion that somehow you even know what that is.
Yes. Now, okay, on that one, though, action without any attachment of results, even if it's quote-unquote a bad thing, like some people go around doing crimes.
Well, what's the intention behind it? I'm going to rob this bank with no attachment to the results. God, no. I mean, they're robbing the bank to get the money.
Right. But they may need the money for the surgery, the operation. Can we always
justify
it?
Well, yeah, it's pretty complex,
it?
Isn't it? It's pretty complex. The guy who robs the store to get some food for his kids is not the same, you know. I mean, he's in jail, but the CEO who, you know, bankrupts, you know, lays off 10,000 people and destroys a community, he gets rewarded with a bonus. I mean, it's all very distorted. But they're both acting out according to the particular karma, their particular understanding of the way things should be. And we can have much more compassionate with the guy trying to feed his family than with the CEO trying to raise his stock prices. But the energy is actually the same. There's this attachment to the results, and you know, it's subtle, it's nuanced. It's not like you can make just a rule that's cut and dry. You know, so many things during the day. How much time do we spend during the day, especially these days, in the days of self-help and personal development and manifestation and all that?
Yes, vision boards.
How much time do we spend trying to fix ourselves, trying to do something to ourselves, trying to change our thinking, raise our vibration, in order that we get some kind of a result? We find ourselves.
I'm going to go with all day, chasing. Almost.
all day. For the most part, it's all day long.
And
inherent in that is a sense that this this moment right here and right now, excuse me, is not okay. There's something essentially wrong with it. And that the future will hold something better. And at that point, you are consciously or unconsciously stuck on Shiva's wheel. This is the wheel of life, yes. Of birth and death. This endless round of one thing after another, chasing a desire. It's chasing your tail. Chasing this desire, if you get it, you feel really good until the next desire arises. If you don't get it, you keep chasing it until either you let go of it or you die. And yes. then the next round of desires comes up, because that's the nature of the wheel. It never ends. The Western idea that somehow you started at the moment of your birth or conception, however they want to see it, and then it ends and there's a judgment at the end, was completely created to serve the interest of empire. It had nothing to do with human beings. And if you look at nature, it doesn't exist. There's no such thing as an end. Everything simply transforms into something else. Nothing begins and nothing stops. It's this endless round, and that's what Shiva's wheel represents, and that's what the Hindu Trinity represents, which is Brahma, the creator, the creative energy, the beginning, right, the cause; Vishnu, the sustainer, right. It maintains a particular form for a bit of a changing over time, and then Shiva, the destroyer, in which the whole thing collapses back into its essence. And guess what? It happens again. And what's driving it is this nature of the flow of energy itself, which we have called karma. When I look at it personally, it looks like it's something I'm trying to manipulate for my benefit. When I look at it impersonally, I see that this is simply the Tao. This is the way things are, and it's my job to harmonize with it, mm-hmm. not to try to control it. And if I harmonize with it, I let go of my own ideas as to how it's supposed to be. And that's the end of suffering.
Oh, and that was a solution, wasn't it? Pishy! The end of suffering, that's a big solution. As you were saying that, I felt like I, again, was being let off the hook a little bit for my life, because this sense of peace was coming over, like, oh, yeah, that's life. There's going to be a thing that comes up, and I go, oh, I don't want it to be this way. But then I kind of go, well, I can try to micromanage and control it and use my karma and do my good thing. But really, if we're coming at life, showing up in life with compassion as our way of being, and just harmonize with it and keep that open heart, then it's just going to be the way it is. No, well, yeah. I've got a goal thing in my mind. Like, do we not set goals? Like, I was like, wait a second, wait, no.
Well, sure.
Is there nothing to do?
Go ahead and set goals. As John Lennon put it, life is what happens to you when you're busy making other plans.
Yes.
You know, go ahead, make the goals. I mean, right? The setting of a goal, every action, the setting of a goal, you know, it does have an effect, but it's the result of a previous cause. So are you actually setting a goal, or is the sense of a goal simply arising within your consciousness? If you look really closely, you'll find you never created anything. You never decided or chose anything. You never did anything. It's always been this flow of energy. And our identification with a part of that flow makes it seem as if there's this flow of life, and then there's me, right? Like there's this universe, and then there's me. The universe is everywhere except here.
Right, yes. So if somebody, okay, let's just take, I don't want to use me, so let's use somebody else. Let's, we had some callers call in before, and they mentioned about looking for a relationship. And so she's waking up, and her goal is, I'm going to find the man who's good to me and I love and I'm happy and it's a beautiful relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's her goal, and it's been her goal for, you know, for a long time now, because it's not happening. Karma, cursed, all those things.
Yeah, all that stuff.
But did she really even set the goal of finding someone she loves? No, because it's just a momentum from all of her flow of life.
Yes. That can seem, to the ego, that's very debilitating.
Yeah, because right now I'm like, well,
WTF.
Yeah.
And you can say, you mean I'm not going to get what I want?
Right. That's what I hear.
That's what everybody hears, right? No, you are, right? You're harmonizing with what is. And when you harmonize with what is, the suffering disappears. It doesn't say you're going to get it or you're not going to get it. right? It becomes a sense of intelligent, conscious disattachment that makes this moment okay, relieves you from the suffering of not having, and then simply opens yourself up to the blessing and the richness of this moment. And if you're able to look at it from the point of view of, the metaphysical approach and all of that, isn't that the best vibration in which something like that could happen? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's paradoxical, but the best condition under which for something to manifest is the condition is where you don't care whether it does or not.
Right.
It ceases to matter because you have the very thing you're really after, which is a sense of contentment in this moment. And whenever we think something other than ourselves, something out there, some experience, a relationship, a state of mind, enlightenment, right, is the answer, then I'm in this, I have projected outside of myself something that only I can give me.
Yes.
And then I become, it's the carrot and the donkey. I'm just going to chase that thing forever. And even if I get it, it won't matter because it doesn't have what I'm looking for.
Right.
This is the way out of karma. Right? To be completely content now means karma ceases to have any effect on you.
So here's an interesting one if about being content and realizing that we have it, it's in us, it is us, is the person who's sitting very ego, I'm going to go into ego world, that we're sitting here and we've got diabetes. And we're checking our blood sugar every 3 hours, being reminded that we have this disease. And is it now not, we don't want it to, we're not just saying, I'd be happy with it. There's a gift there. There might be, but you can't control it. So don't worry about your blood sugar. So we're not saying anything like don't take action, are we?
No, of course not. Right. Yeah, that's silly. To be free of karma doesn't mean that you sit there and do nothing, because that creates karma, right?
Right, okay,
You can't get out of it, okay?
So, right.
So what do you do? Well, you make the smartest decisions you can, right? What's the actual cause of diabetes? It's a shitty diet. Right. End of story.
Yeah.
It's a toxic environment. It's eating a bunch of processed foods for so long, the body has just made these distortions to try to survive. Mm-hmm. So what do? You change what you can. This is... You adjust what you can according to the best information you have, and then you let go of it. That's karma yoga.
Okay, that's what it is. That's the let go part.
Yes. Because at that point, what happens from that point, you don't control what happens.
Right.
All you can do is do whatever is in front of you to do with the highest wisdom you have at that moment. That's all you can do.
Right. I got it. I have the aha moment right there. The karma. Oh my gosh. We are looking at karma in the way like, okay, I did the best thing I could do. And then I have my hand out waiting for the brownie point.
Yep.
But it's just do the best thing what you can do. And then that's that. No handout, no waiting to be smacked. No, neither of those.
No, you're done.
Aha.
Yes.
Okay. I'm happy. Okay.
It's like, people approach it like they're gonna, their mission is to sit down, and they sit down and they're waiting to sit down. You're already sat down. You're done.
Right.
You're sitting.
Right. You're waiting for somebody to tell them they're sitting. Like, I want to just make sure I am sitting, right?
Yeah. Am I sitting? So, you get online, you hire the expert.
Yes, to tell me that I'm sitting.
Yeah, butt in contact. Yep. Well done.
But it's funny because it's almost so true.
It is completely true. It's what we do. We want some kind of confirmation to come along, somebody to tell us everything is okay.
Yes, and there's a belief around that.
Nobody can do that. Yeah, nobody can do that.
We do have time. This is good. How do we get, is it through self-inquiry that we can strengthen our belief in ourselves, or we don't, once we do self-inquiry, we actually don't need to strengthen our belief in ourselves?
Well, self-inquiry is, you see through the self that needs to be strengthened, right? It's a self. If there's an image of yourself that needs to be strengthened, you need to see if that image of yourself is actually true. We assume it's true, and then we set about trying to strengthen it, or make it more humble, or make it more spiritual, or make it more rich, whatever we're trying to do. And we never question the legitimacy of the self-image we're holding that we think we need to improve.
Right.
And therein lies the big difference between between non-dual spirituality and pretty much everything else. We ask the question, who are you? Who is this that you're trying to improve? Self-help assumes there's somebody there who's, you know, who's deficient or broken in some way, and they can be fixed. Mm-hmm. So that's an assumption.
Yes.
Right? And so we set out, you know, and create a $20 billion a year industry on all the different ways we can be fixed. The world has continued to get worse and worse.
Yes.
Even though self-help has gotten bigger and bigger and bigger.
More chefs in the kitchen, cooks in the kitchen.
Yeah. Absolutely. And so, but nobody questions. Okay, you think you're broken and need to be fixed. Okay, tell me who you are. If you're that convinced you're broken and need to be fixed, please tell me who you are. You must know. You know, anybody says, I really want this. I know I want this. I've wanted this for a long time. And I say, okay, good. If you really want that, you must know who you are.
Right.
And then everybody comes up short. Well, I'm, and then they start, well, I'm this. I'm a guy. I'm this old. I'm born here. No. Those are attributes. I want to know who you are. Yeah, but I got this degree from, I don't care about your degrees. Who are you? Who's the guy? Who is it that got the degree? Who were you before the degree? Now, after the degree. That's all content. That's all the stuff in your head. That's all the things you've done, all the things you've experienced. Who are you? Without any of it. Take all of that away, because that's all peripheral, right?
Right.
That might have happened, that might not have happened. Different experience, you had a different degree, you're doing a different thing, but yet you're still here. You are still you. Who are you? This is the question of self-inquiry. And in order to get to it, we have to kind of dig through all of the ideas we have about ourselves that aren't true. And, you know, just a little extra tidbit there. When you discover who you actually are, it's what you are. That wasn't caused. So it has nothing to do with karma. It has no beginning and it has no end. Karma is all beginnings and ends, cause and effect. What is who you actually are, the truth of your being, was not caused. It is the first principle. It just is. And so it is completely free of karma.
Just as you said it more beautifully, I was going to say, so we are separate from karma, but I like that you said we are free of karma. So we'll go to commercial break and we come back. I'd like to, yes, let's enjoy that moment of being free of karma and the flow of enlightenment. Freedom.
Conscious Media for Conscious Minds. Om Times.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose: to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, host of Om Times Magazine's flagship radio show, What Is Going Om? My passion is sifting through information, research, and innovations from New Thought teachers, speakers, and researchers pushing back the boundaries of what we know about life, energy, metaphysics, and the universe. I love shifting perceptions about who we are, why we're here, and how quickly impossible becomes normal when we open our minds, expand our awareness, and accept that the only limits that exist are those we place upon ourselves. So if you're the kind of forward-thinking, eager investigator of what lies beyond the current reality that most perceive, why not make a date to come play with me in the field of possibilities at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern Time every Thursday, and together we can discover what's really going on.
These are the sounds of a dinner. A dinner that almost didn't happen. A dinner now served. thanks to people like you. Due to COVID-19, 17 million more Americans may face hunger. Feeding America is helping our neighbors in need. And if you're able, you can too. Donations are being accepted at feedingamerica.org/coronavirus. Brought to you by the Ad Council and Feeding America, 200 food banks strong.
Oh, welcome back to the Flow of Enlightenment, everyone. And now, well, we won't share that one, but what I will say is that we were kind of giggling over the commercial break there because learning that the yoga of karma, how to allow and just say, yep, what's going on, no matter how shocking, embarrassing, funny, bad, good, even good. And which is one of the four agreements. Don't take it personally, whether it's good or bad, you know, yeah. And that's an interesting one. So, let's, I'm cooking dinner. And the phone's ringing, and I missed the garbage truck, which happened last Tuesday, by the way. Things are happening, and then you think, okay, but I'm supposed to just accept it. Like, nope, it was supposed to. No, is there a difference between it's supposed to happen and it happened?
There's no difference. If you just see it as just happening. The idea that it's supposed to happen, you know, and then there's the idea that it's not supposed to happen, right?
Right.
And we're for the most part, we're stuck in the idea that it's not supposed to happen.
That's right.
Why? Because I don't want it to. I mean, that's what it boils down to. But it happens. Everything just happens. And, you know, the whole idea of cause and effect and the chain of causation and the karma, it's so infinitely complex. It's not linear, right?
Right.
I mean, everything happening in the universe makes this moment happen. I mean, everything. You know, this moment could only happen because the universe is the way the universe is, period. So it is this infinitely complex, multidimensional interrelationship, which, when you really see it, you see that it's actually one big functioning thing. It's one essence. It's one being, really, yes. Of which all of these are different aspects. And it's that oneness that actually holds it all together. And so the practice is always harmonizing with what is, letting go of what you think should be, and harmonizing yourself in mind, body, and spirit with what is. That means dropping your story. Dropping your ideas, dropping your goals, dropping your aspirations, dropping your desires. This is what it's really pointing to.
And dropping blame, too. And I love that you went on all the positive things. But yes, responsibility, dropping even all those yucky things. Like
guilt. What guilt and shame can there be when you realize you never did anything? It all just happened. Right? Everything you've ever done has always been the result of that's happening. Becoming conscious doesn't mean we get control over it. Becoming conscious means I recognize it and I harmonize with it.
Recognize and harmonize. That's right.
There's a show title.
Yeah. Because you're right, I think, you just highlighted was, and I never thought about that before, is I'm connecting with what you said, that yes, I think I always thought, okay, once I'm conscious, ha-ha, I'm God, I'm in control. Yeah.
Yes.
But that's not the payoff.
Oh, no, that's a very primitive idea, and it's based on the ego and will, that somehow I'm going to get to will as I will. I'm going to get to decide what karma is going to do. And no, the object isn't to take control over the flow. It is to see that the flow is happening in you and that you are greater than even the flow. You know, God doesn't have to assert herself.
Right.
God doesn't get offended.
Right.
God doesn't say, damn it, I didn't want that to happen.
That's not how you play the game.
That's right. I'm going to punish you. Wipe them out.
But some people really, that's a really big belief, though. Like, whoa, that hurricane, you know, was the country's or state's karma, the island's karma. and it was cursed, and or the people did not sacrifice or offer or pray enough. But none of these matter.
That's how we look at it. I mean, yes, it is. I mean, the United States has built up enormously bad karma. You know, through slavery, through the genocide of the Native Americans.
Oh, you just said we did build up karma, but built up momentum.
Yes, it's a building up of momentum in a certain direction. And at a certain point, there's just no way to stop it. It's just going to go where it is. It's going to crash into the wall or wherever it is. You can't stop it, right? Yeah. And you know, if you've been contributing to that, and you contribute to it by your resistance to it or your attempt to make it work, you're creating this energy. Right, you're not really creating it. You're just ignorantly participating in it, but it's being magnified, and it gains momentum. Right,
right.
And consciousness actually steps you out of that momentum, but for a while, you're still going to get pummeled by it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean,
the
most humble approach to take is that everything is happening in my life right now is justified.
Okay.
What's happening now is from all the stuff that I've done previously. So what do? You get on your knees and say, thank you, and I totally accept the consequences of my own actions. And you don't create new ones. And you just, it's the most humble, most beautiful place to be. It is not my will, but thine be done. It is a total surrender. And that means, you know, taking your licks.
Right. So if we do like our lives and we do like what's showing up and we love our momentum and we love our built up, so to speak, karma that we're living, we just continue that path as best awareness and way we can.
You still have to let go of it, because if you get attached to that, it will eventually eventually Great. Fall into its opposite. You can't help it. The crest has to become the trough.
Okay.
Right? So now you can get prideful. Oh, look at the good karma. And, you know,
yes.
That's been all the case, right? I'm better than you. I've had better karma. Look at you. It's all your fault. That sort of thing. And people who are, you know, extremely financially successful now pat themselves on the back. They don't realize they just happen to be riding that wave in that moment. And you better humble your ass, because you have no idea what's coming next. That cosmic 2x4 is on its way.
Yes.
So you don't attach to it. All things must pass. We like to remind ourselves that when we're in a bad time, but we don't like to remind ourselves like that when we're in a good time.
I'm so happy. Well, don't worry. That will pass.
That will pass. No, that yes, and it's the case. Don't get attached to that either. That's more of the same. Right?
Yes.
And if in that process it amplifies and deepens the egoic sense of self. Ooh. Mm. Oh boy.
Right.
You in trouble. You are in trouble.
Yes. You know, I know it's a math thing, but I remember my dad, you know, always saying, you know, when we're little learning math, what you do to one side, you have to do the other. Maybe not a little, because I was more algebra-y, but yes. That it's so true. He always did parables, so it kind of makes sense that he would say that throughout life, because it's so true. It's like, it's, you can't just not be attached to the bad. You have to not be attached to the good.
Yes. Yeah. The accounts have to be balanced. And then you're perfectly in the middle. And in the middle, nothing moves.
Right.
You're at the hub of the wheel. The wheel can keep going and you can even enjoy it. But you're not spinning. Right. If you're out on the edge of the wheel, it's just, whoa, hanging on for dear life. But you're at the hub. You're just simply watching life go. You're watching the flow.
Right.
Right? You're not in the flow. That is, you're not being swept away by the flow. You're watching the flow.
Right.
And life is this beautiful flow, but it's no longer personal. It's just this wonderful manifestation of the stillness. Because the flow can only be perceived by the central stillness.
Yeah, the eye of the sun.
The ocean.
Yeah. The center. So if we're helping people to, is the question just seriously always back to who am I defined to get to that center? And
yep.
what is that? So, okay. So here I am and I'm going, well, if I almost feel like there's no answer, but there is. Like, so if I sit with myself, like, oh, who am I? But what you've directed, what I've learned as a student thus far is that it's first for me to figure out what I am, who I am not, and who is not real.
Yes, because the truth is, there is no answer to the question, who am I? That is, there's no cognitive or discursive answer. You are the answer. You're the answer to all your questions, yes. But in order to get that, we have to break our habits of objectifying ourselves, of thinking of ourselves in terms of something else, of the various reference point, I am this or that. And that's what it's meant by, this is what I am not. And the insight that I am not that leads you basically back, eventually, to the place where there's nothing left that you're not. And what's left? Well, just me. I'm still here. What am I? I have no idea.
when you, earlier you were talking about, our Eastern philosophies versus our Western culture here, it feels like, and I could be wrong, I don't want to insult anybody, but feels like the Western, we have built a more of what we are not than who we are. And if that is possibly true, just between us human beings, G.P. Walsh and Lisa Berry here, in what we can answer, is it because as culture has brought us up in whichever religion way, that perhaps the Eastern philosophy has had more of the non-attachment conditioning?
Well, yes, these ideas are common in the East. It's not that they're all perfectly understood. I mean, it's not like this perfect, utopian culture. It's nothing like that at all.
Yeah.
But its roots are much more closely connected to that reality of the recognition of the infinite nature of being. The East, the central idea is God or the Creator is immanent in creation, not separate from it. So when you look around, all you're seeing is God. Everything is the face of God, or Shiva, or Brahma, however you want to name it. In the West, we have a very different view of creation. There's this creator and then creation, and they're very, very separate. And so everything is defined as an ethical system rather than a spiritual system. You form a relationship with God. You don't become God. You don't have unity with God. You can't. You're two. And the Western culture is warlike. It's very materialistic. It springs from the Abrahamic religions that, and at the time, the Abrahamic Judaism and the like, they were all basically warrior cultures with warrior gods, and they kind of fought each other. And, this one prophet, Jesus, or a sage, showed up in that particular lineage in a very backward time in Rome, one of the most brutal empires that has ever existed. And one thing led to another, and before you know it, you have this mixture of the warlike culture, an empire culture, a culture based purely on material values, conquest, and the accumulation of wealth, which is what the Roman Empire was about. And that's our heritage here in the West, and it's still going on.
Yes.
It's happening to this day. And so God becomes the one who endorses your imperialism.
That's a bold statement, and it's very true.
Well, it is. That is the God of this. That is the God of this world.
Yes, and we kind of came right back, which is so interesting as we wrap this up, is that we've come back about separation and not harmonizing, and that separation, and I'll squeeze this in really fast here. I'm reminded of just as simple as getting along with somebody else. I remember going through a relationship counseling 15 years ago, and the first thing it says, what are your morals, values, core values? And thinking this was going to be a great exercise, I did them only to walk away going, yep, these are my core values. And if we don't share them, then mine are mine, and mine are better for me, and yours suck. And I'm, it was just almost like it was more of a separation, because the question wasn't asked, which you've been sharing with us, is who am I? Not what are my core values?
Right, because those can come and go.
Yeah.
And those are cultural, you know?
Yes, they're cultural.
The same person born in Japan is going to have a very different set of core values than somebody born in Nebraska.
Right. Does it mean they couldn't get along? So. No,
well, if you understand that what we call our core values are not absolute truths, you're free of those. I mean, we need to have values. We need to have agreements and conventions so we don't kill each other all the time.
Yes.
Unless, of course, your value is to kill everybody all the time, which is where we are right now.
Right.
But if you recognize that they are just a convention and not an absolute truth, the heart can open. You can have dialogue. You can explore. You can use a part of you that is naturally transcendent, and that allows you to bring harmony to your life. It takes you out of karma. It puts you in the flow. And where else would you want to be?
No. So everybody will lead with compassion. So thank you, GP. You've been here with us, with GP Walsh and Lisa Berry. Well, thank you. Join us next week, Tuesday, on The Flow of Enlightenment.